We're about to have a conversation with Julie Lewis, who is program coordinator at the Community College of Baltimore County. Is that what CCBC
That's right.
Is? Yes. That right?
Yes.
Theater department. Director of the Consumables, a new play running at the College Community Center Theater from April 3rd to April the 8th. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So it was funny, before we started the talking, I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I thought I knew anything about theater programs in Baltimore City, and now you're saying this is a huge theater program in Baltimore County Community Colleges.
Yes.
Community College of Baltimore County.
Yeah, and we have our, I was just telling you, we're nationally accredited, one of the only community colleges in the country, one of seven, to have national accreditation.
How long have you been there?
I've been there 9 years, but I've been the coordinator of the program now. This is only my second year as the coordinator.
Wow. So, let's talk about what you actually came here to talk about. I just didn't know that, and that's interesting to know that people can go there and actually major in theater?
Absolutely. They can major in performance. They can major in production design. They can receive an AA, and we would help them transfer into other programs, or they can receive an AFA in fine arts. And
there's actually an AFA.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. We have an AFA in theater.
Who knew? I know BFAs and MFAs,
right.
But who knew? I didn't know.
Yeah, and it's an awesome program. We have lots of good faculty and guest directors and lots of performance opportunities and scholarship opportunities. Actually, I'll give it a plug. On April 5th, we have our scholarship auditions, and so they can contact me, Julie Lewis, to come and get a tour and even audition for a scholarship for our theater program.
Wow. And, I mean, intuition is pretty low to start with it.
It's very reasonable. I mean, it's going up as everything else, but
everything else, right?
Comparatively, it's really reasonable. And we have lots of students transfer into 4-year programs after us.
So, one of the projects we're talking about specifically right now is this production you have, The Consumables, right?
Yes.
And I found it really interesting when I saw this come through the email, and we talked about it again when it came back twice, actually, in the email. But that this is because we've interviewed David Shipler, who wrote The Working Poor,
right,
numerous times in the show.
Oh, okay.
So, and then I saw this production is based on his book.
In part. So it's based partly on his book, and it's also based partly on interviews from the working poor in Baltimore, which is basically a lot of people we already know. So my students and my students as well. So what the ensemble did before we got into officially improvising, rehearsing, and creating the piece, we interviewed people in different areas of retail, hospitality, fast food, all sorts of areas, and used those interviews along with David Shipler's book, The Working Poor, to be a jumping-off point. We thought we were going to be moving more of a documentary-style piece, but there was no central event to base. Like, if you're familiar with the Laramie Project or Fires in the Mirror,
right,
there's a central event that they're basing the piece off of. We had a lot of people's stories that had parallels, but we didn't have a central narrative event occur. So what we did is we used those interviews and the book to create an artistic response to that work. So we used that as our source material. And you'll hear bits and pieces of the language, but they've been turned into collage. They've been fragmented. There's a lot of movement and dance that goes along with it, original music that goes with it. So it's become much more of an artistic piece.
So give me an example of how that would work. I mean, say you have I remember Howard Zinn's People's History was turned into a similar piece. I know that I was in that piece. It was done with the Creative Alliance, but a few years back. So I'm curious how you approach this. I mean, so these pieces were recorded,
right.
Some come out of David Shipler's book, and then talk about the creative process. What did you do with them then?
So this is part of it is the creative process for devising new works of theater. What we did is we took things that had been repeated in various interviews, themes that had occurred, or just moments that the interviewee was describing, and then we did improvisations based on those. So we created improv work from that. So have the actors give the actors, you know, a scene from an interview, give the actors a phrase from an interview, and then allow them to work with movement and with maybe a little bit of dialogue and with music, and these scenes kind of emerged from that.
So the piece is being performed, not actually done like as monologues coming from the people they've interviewed, but you're taking a piece of what the people said and then then kind of creating something theatrically and musically out of that.
Yes, yes. And you actually, there's a couple, there's within that, you do hear a couple monologues because they work. I didn't want them to be forced. I didn't want it to be a play where someone steps out and says, well, now here's my story, and now here's my story, which is great. I mean, that's fantastic, but that's not the work that we were doing. But within it, you do hear their voices coming through. And no, it's not a series of verbatim monologues.
So can you give an example of how this works?
Sure. Okay, so...
you don't have to act out if you don't want to, but you can give us an example. Of
okay.
Unless you want to.
The one-woman show.
Well, with that right now, yes. Curtains up.
Yeah.
Curtains up.
And scene. no, that'd be... we have an ensemble of 11 people, so doing it myself
Which one would you like to be?
I'm going to be all at once. So let's say, for example, we have a scene of healthcare. Okay? That opens up with a woman on the phone, and... her, and this is from a true story. This is actually a story from one of our cast members, family members. And her uncle had a stroke and was told by the nursing home he was staying in that everything would be covered 100%. And they kept using that phrase 100%, only to find out that it had not all been covered and that all of these things that they were told by the nursing home would be were not. So she had to call her insurance company. And the scene then moves from realism to her on the phone and her, you know, trying to deal with this, to this more hyper-realistic scene of the insurance company where you have, well, you know, what's imagined to be scores and scores of people in their chairs answering insurance phone calls and a woman telling them the correct way, you know, to respond to these calls. And we kind of see it from different angles. We see it from the angle of the person who was supposed to be insured but wasn't. We see it from the angle of the people who work in the call centers who are being, you know, who have to stick to these scripts, who have to stay in these sort of uncomfortable, I mean, you know, positions, essentially diverting people into away from the questions that they're trying to find out about. And then from that, it breaks out into an entire carnival scene because one of the call center people let us know that the sick, you know, for these nursing homes, it's the sicker the better. So, you know, they like pay, you know, it's as we know, it's not health care, it's sick care. So
right.
Patients almost come in with price tags on them. And if you can, you know, if you can get them certain, get them breathing machines, get them on dialysis, whatever those things are, they're worth more money to the nursing home. So they're given priority as they come in. And once their insurance runs out, they're essentially dropped. So that turns into a big carnival scene on the stage with people wheeling in on wheelchairs and being spun on gurneys and a carnival master, a barker calling out all the different diseases and people moving around him and him, you know, pushing someone with Alzheimer's and pushing people off the stage.
Uh-huh.
And then it comes and at the end of it goes back down to just that woman trying to be on the phone, trying to get coverage for her brother that she, was told she could have coverage for. So that's an example of one scene.
So what are some of the other things you cover in this play?
We cover, we have a scene of people who, this is so funny with devising. We go into tech this week and we have a new scene that we have not worked out. So I'll tell you, the healthcare is one of the oldest scenes. One of the newest scenes that we're going to be working on more tonight are college graduates who, you know, a lot of the interviews talked about putting money up for college, expecting to have a job, and not seeing any economic return. And I think we see that. We see that it's no longer an investment to invest. I say this as a college professor. I still think it's a worthwhile endeavor to go to college. But it's in terms of a monetary gain, people aren't seeing that. They're graduating with degrees and working in fields that are nothing close to the fields that they studied in college and making, you know, a pittance while they're there. So we had this scene of a restaurant where this couple's going into a restaurant and each person they encounter clearly did not intend to be there. So their hostess starts sort of, you know, they say, could I have a table for two? And she said, well, what do you mean by a table for two? She's a psychology major. So she's sort of analyzing them as they go to their table. Their waitress was a biology major. And when they ask about the food, she describes it in these biological terms that aren't very appetizing. So they have this whole, and you know, the busboy corrects their grammar as he's coming through. He was an English lit major. So that's one of this kind of lighter scenes we're working on now. But it connects right back to all the interviews because they interviewed so many people who studied all of these different fields in college, even ones that you were told you could get a job in, like science, and they're you know.
And you have music in this as well?
Yes, yes. There's lots of music.
Lots of music.
There's lots of music. The music, sometimes the music comments on what's happening. The music brings us into what's happening. Part of the music is that we created this meta-narrative that the pianist is driving them to work through the entire show. So through the show, you see that they are working under less than working with these less than ideal conditions, and they're being driven by the music to go faster and faster. The show actually gets faster and faster, to the point of exhaustion for them.
So, who are the actors in this thing? And who's, I mean, so who wrote this, first of all?
Well, that's where you kind of come up with
this ensemble.
It was created by the ensemble. As the director, I've been the person to kind of pick and choose what stays and what goes, and then to fill in places where I'm primarily a playwright, so, and director. But so I've kind of gone in and cleaned it up here, worked with it there. But really, everybody wrote it. So all 11 of us, well, 12 including myself, wrote the piece. And then we also have a choreographer, and Melinda Blomquist, she is our she's dance faculty at CCBC, so she's contributed in a lot of ways in terms of movement. And then Anthony Bianco, the composer of the music, he's one of the writers as well. So we're all writing it.
Are they all faculty?
No, I'm faculty, and our choreographer is faculty. All of the people in the ensemble are current CCBC students. Some are theater majors, some are not theater majors. And our Anthony Bianco is a guest. He was actually a student of mine 10 years ago, and he just recently moved to Baltimore, and he's a musician. So he was a guest who came in to work with us.
That's wild. So when and how? When's the production?
So we open April 3rd. That's a Thursday at 8 p.m. on the Essex campus. And we have performances April 3rd, 4th, and 5th, which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. And then we also have a couple of daytime performances, which are April 7th at 10 a.m., and April 8th at 1 p.m. And each performance is going to be followed. Like Act 1 is essentially the show I'm talking about. Act 2 is a discussion with the audience. Oh. So there's going to be a discussion about the stuff that...
With whom? The actors themselves?
The actors and the audience. We really want to hear their stories of working as well.
So this one weekend?
Yes.
So is a phone number to call to reserve seats or a email address?
Yes. You can call 443-840-ARTS, or you can...
That's easy.
Yeah.
How'd you get that number?
I don't...
That's good. And there was the other?
And the other, they can email me, jlewis2@ccbcmd.edu. If they just want more information about the piece, or if they want to bring a group, for example, we have a high school group coming. We have some college groups coming, we have a book club coming. So if they want some more information about that,
very
they can
cool.
contact me. Yes.
Well, this sounds great. So we're going to go out of here, play a little bit of the sound from your production, and appreciate you coming in. Julie Lewis is program coordinator with CCBC's theater department, talking about the consumables. The play will be running from April the 3rd to
April the 8th.
The 8th.
Yes.
And we want to add, let folks know, this production is also co-sponsored and part of the CCBC's Book Connection, a series of programs going on at CCBC that our friend Kim Jensen and others are working on. And this production will be part of that whole series. And so we'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks and different things they're doing. So do not miss it. It sounds like this is really interesting. So thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Machines are getting quicker, and they're smarter, and they're stronger than the strongest of the living human bodies. Yes, in time.